of WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan, and joining me is Rob Lori. And today I'm going to bring you a couple of topics. We're going to talk about plastics. A new study by Greenpeace says that just because there's a pandemic, we don't have to only rely on disposable plastic. There are smart alternatives. Also, later on, we'll talk about threats to Black Lives Matter protesters with our guest Ashley Green from Dream Defenders. We'll also hear a story from WMNF's Daniel Figueroa IV. And instead of our typical one-week fundraising drive in the beginning of October, we're breaking up into 2 days at a time, so we'll be back to normal programming on Wednesday. Right now, we need your donation to support the excellent news and public affairs programming at WMNF. If you'd like to support the show, give us a call right now, 813-238-8001. You can also pledge on the web at WMNF.org, or you can donate on the WMNF app. And we have a big goal this hour. We need to raise $3,000. We can do that with your help if you make a donation right now, 813-238-8001.
Thanks to Andrew and Karen at Jerk Hut here in the Tampa Bay area. They've sent individually prepared jerk chicken, rice, and veggie lunches for the volunteers and staff here today. Jerk Hut has three Tampa locations, 1241 East Fowler Avenue near USF, 4495 West Gandy Boulevard in South Tampa, and the newest in Seminole Heights at 1045 East Hillsborough Avenue. We're very happy to have the Jerk Hut's ongoing support of community radio. And Julie tells me the food is delicious. I think Sean and I have been working so hard, we haven't been able to get any of the great food. Thanks to Richard Cohen from Scarsdale, New York. Richard, thank you very much for that $100 contribution, because your donation will help us reach that $1,000 challenge. Richard says, new to the area, surfing through the radio channels, landed on MNF and really liked the station. Richard, great to have you here. Thank you for calling. And Anonymous in Treasure Island just made a $100 contribution, nice. Sean. We're very close. I think we need three of those and we'll get that $1,000 contribution. Thank you, Anonymous. 813-238-8001. This is listener-supported radio.
And Mike and Arlene Sullivan have called in with a $50 contribution, but this is an up of their previous pledge by $50 in order to meet that challenge. So thank you for that. Also, Edgar Santiago with a $100 donation from Tampa.
Edgar, thank you.
Remember, today is the last day to register to vote. And Teresa Mahoney from Tampa is contributing $100 and is getting the WMNF face mask. That means that we made the $1,000 pledge.
Thank you so much.
The $1,000 challenge.
Made that contribution, yeah. So we are... in fact, Sean, now I think we're even closer. You don't need to raise $3,000. I think you just need to raise about $2,800 to stay on track. So Sean's got a great show coming up. He works so hard on these programs. He brings in doctors. He brings in attorneys. He brings in people who are expert in human rights and civil rights. He brings on Planned Parenthood guests. And this is really a great midpoint program, because, Sean, you can hear the work that goes into this program. So please, and he carries live debates or tape recordings of live debates between candidates. So think about all the great programs that Sean has done here on Midpoint, and please keep this great program on the air. This is what community radio should sound like. Debates, you are going to hear opinions that you disagree with, but you're also smart. You're smarter than the average radio listener, because you listen to WMNF and you hear all this range of opinion, and you can make up your own mind. Sean isn't telling you what to think when he does his show. Please make that contribution right now by going online, WMNF.org. We think this is one of the best radio stations in all of Florida. It's unique. There are very few community radio stations in Florida. So please make your contribution right now by calling 813-238-8001.
And Rob, I want to thank one more donation that just came in. A $100 contribution from Charlie Young from Sydney, Florida, is getting the WMNF t-shirt. Thank you so much, Charlie, for that donation. And thanks to everyone who has donated already. And I want to thank you, if you're calling in right now to donate, or if you're calling in soon, please give us a call, 813-238-8001. You can also donate at WMNF.org. I'm going to go first to our first topic, and we're going to go right now to our first topic, and that is we're going to hear about how to protect the environment. Even during the pandemic, disposables, including plastics, are commonly used these days in order to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. But in this interview I did with David Pinsky, the Greenpeace USA senior plastics campaigner, you'll find out that reusable materials can work as well. David Pinsky is the author of the Greenpeace report, Reusables Are Doable.
Welcome to WMNF, David Pinsky with Greenpeace USA. I want to start with, what are your concerns about disposables and about single-use plastic?
Well, thanks so much for having me, Sean. You know, the equivalent of one truckload full of plastic is entering our oceans every minute of every day, year after year. We're seeing the fossil fuel and petrochemical plastics industries wanting to ramp up production, largely for single-use plastics, in the next couple of decades. And we know that only 9% of all plastics ever created have been recycled. Even more have been incinerated, or in our landfills, are now showing up in our environments, in our air, our food, in our water. So it's time that we really need to take on this plastic pollution crisis, which is also fueling the climate crisis, and eliminate single-use plastics and move to reuse and refill solutions.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of people are switching to things that they can just throw away, maybe using plastic containers and then throwing them away rather than risk infection from reusables. But your new report, Reusables Are Doable, says that it's possible to use reusables and be safe.
Exactly. So in our new report, Reusables Are Doable, we're showing that around the world, reuse and refill models have continued to be used or can be used safely during the pandemic. And this is despite the plastic industry's efforts to push widespread disposables. These reuse systems can instill confidence, ensure strong sanitization or contactless systems for cups and containers that make it both convenient and safe for customers and workers alike. And Sean, just in the last couple of months, we've now seen 130 health experts from 20 countries around the world weighing in on the ways to use reusables safely and pushing back on that narrative that single-use plastics are safer than reusables.
There are some places where plastic bans have been paused or reusables have been restricted. What's happening there, and do you think that that's a good idea?
Right. So certainly, you know, what we've seen is that in toward the beginning of the pandemic here in the U.S., that the plastics industry was promoting some studies that were where it was claiming that single-use plastics were safer than reusables. And so we know this was an industry-led effort that was really trying to exploit people's anxiety about the pandemic and wanting to keep their families safe. And so what we know is that, you know, this is indeed certainly has led to some rollbacks in certain states. So I'm here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So in California, the state temporarily paused its ban on single-use plastic bags. It's now been reinstated. We've seen that happen in some other states as well. So Massachusetts was banning reusable bags, has now said that, hey, that's fine, you go ahead and resume reusable bags. In Vermont, Vermont moved forward with its ban on single-use plastic bags, despite some of these efforts from industry to push back. And I think, Sean, what's really important for folks to know is that the fossil fuel and plastic industries know that their time is limited, that we're seeing more investments in renewables. We're seeing folks that want an end to the plastic pollution crisis and want to move to these reuse and refill systems. So they're really throwing whatever they can at the wall. But the public knows that this is not only important to keep our oceans safe, it's important to keep our families safe, and especially communities of color that are on the front lines of fossil fuel and plastics industry and manufacturing production, that this is also a public health crisis, and we deserve better.
We're speaking with David Pinsky, the author of Reusables Are Doable. He's a Greenpeace USA senior plastics campaigner, and you're listening to WMNF. David, I wanted to ask if you have an example of a business that's using reusables and refill systems, even during the pandemic, and what we can learn from that.
Sure. So, Sean, one of the most well-known reusable companies out there is Loop, which started just last year in 2019. It's expanded throughout the U.S. It's starting to expand in the European markets. And it works with large brands such as Nestle, Unilever, and Procter & Gamble. And so folks, when they sign up with Loop, they can get a reusable packaging sent to their doorstep, and some major brands, you know, such as Häagen-Dazs, comes in a reusable container. And then when folks are done with that product, they return the container. And of course, all of these companies have already been adhering, when we talk again about health and safety, to FDA standards for sanitization to make sure that these containers can be reused safely for the next customer. And we're seeing large companies here, supermarket chains like Kroger, that are working with Loop to provide this to customers. Of course, even Kroger that stands out working with Loop needs to markedly expand its investments in reuse and refill. And, you know, some others come to mind. in Florida Publix, in Winn-Dixie, right? We need to see these companies that are making billions of dollars every year to really markedly shift and reduce their single-use plastic footprint and invest in these reuse and refill systems. And when that happens, Sean, we're really going to see a transformation, not just here in the U.S., but around the world.
There's a reusable food delivery system for lunches in India that your report talks about. How does that work, and how could businesses in the U.S. learn from that model?
So, yeah, that system has been around for 130 years now. It's called Dabawala's, and that is where folks largely for their lunches get a lunch delivered to them largely via bicycle. Sometimes folks are moving around on the extensive train system there in India, and that comes in a reusable tin or stainless steel container, and then that is, of course, returned and cleaned. And so that's been a very effective model. It's been around for 130 years. You know, some folks will probably remember the milkman coming to their door. So these aren't new ideas, but what we have seen and, you know, around the middle of the 20th century was a market increase in single-use plastics and, you know, this convenience model that was sold to us. But of course, we know now the public health and the environmental impacts of runaway disposable plastics and that need to shift. And in the U.S. here, one of the companies we feature in the report, the Wally Shop, has a similar model to Loop, where it's delivering reusable containers with grocery staples in them to your doorstep. And they were inspired by that system of Dabawala's in India. So I think what's really exciting at this moment, Sean, is we're seeing a lot of innovation, a lot of startups here that are bringing these reuse models to Americans throughout the country. And so now really the question is, are some of these bigger brands, are Walmart, Publix, Target, are they going to invest in these systems as well, or find themselves soon obsolete if they don't change with the times?
Would it be expensive to replace throwaway plastics with reusable containers?
So the Ellen MacArthur Foundation put out a great report called Reuse, and they found that there's over $10 billion economic opportunity for companies if they are going to just reduce their single-use plastics by 20% and shift to reusable systems. So that, you know, that's one figure there, but that's not a small chunk of change. And of course, many of these companies are driven by the economics. So I think there's a huge opportunity here. But it's important, Sean, that we also need to make sure that these systems are affordable and accessible to folks in making all levels of income. And, you know, other models that we've seen are bring your own container. So further up on the East Coast, Mom's Organic Market, which is based out of Maryland and operates in states such as Virginia, Pennsylvania, New York, they have a bulk section where folks can bring in their own containers. And they have certain standards. You need to make sure that you clean it before you bring it in. They've continued to operate that model throughout the pandemic. And so I think there are some low-cost options as well for us to be able to participate in this reuse revolution to protect our communities and the planet.
David, before I let you go, I want to ask you about another news item. This month, Greenpeace USA workers announced their intent to unionize. Is that something you can talk about?
Well, what I can say is that Greenpeace management has responded, said that they support the effort of workers to unionize. Of course, we work very closely with unions and are excited to ensure that workers are part of the solution, not just at Greenpeace, but as we mentioned as well in Reusables Are Doable in the report. It's very important that we're not leaving behind workers, we're not leaving behind communities, and that we really are able to move forward together, especially as there's been such a change and hardship during the pandemic.
Well, David, those are my questions. Is there anything else that people should know about your report, Reusables Are Doable?
Well, I encourage folks to take a look, go to greenpeace.org, check out Reusables Are Doable, how you can take action, not just to be a part of the reuse revolution, but again, when next time you go to Publix, or if you want to call them up because you're social distancing, let them know that you want to see Publix, you want to see Winn-Dixie, you want to see Target, to take action on the plastic pollution crisis, to eliminate single-use plastics and switch to reuse and refill systems.
David Pinsky with Greenpeace USA, thanks so much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
That was David Pinsky with Greenpeace USA. He's the senior plastics campaigner with that group, and he's author of the Greenpeace report, Reusables Are Doable. And later today, I will link to that report and to this interview on WMNF.org. Very soon, we're going to turn to our next topic, the Black Lives Matter protests in St. Petersburg and elsewhere in the Tampa Bay area. Our guest is Ashley Green. She's been very patient holding on while we've started the show, but we're going to go to her in just a second. I want to thank a few more people, and I'm going to ask for your support for programming like you're hearing right now. If you appreciate hearing from the Greenpeace report about reusables are doable, if that's something that is useful to you, give us a call right now and support the station, 813-238-8001. My name is Sean Canaan, and I am the host of Midpoint Monday, every Monday at noon on 88.5 FM. We still need to raise $2,500 this hour. I'm going to thank a few people, and also joining me in the studio is Daniel Figueroa IV. Thanks so much for coming in, Daniel, to help me pitch.
Hey, my pleasure. Couldn't be possible to be here without the support of our lovely listeners out there. We got a couple who came in, some donations. Margo Stanhope from Sarasota said she just really loves MNF, said these times would be impossible without WMNF. So thank you, Margo, for your contribution. She's making a monthly pledge. And also Janet from Merritt Island wants to send a monthly a one-time payment of $60. And she just loves the alternative health sustainability content we cover, and she wants us to keep up the great work, and we certainly will do our best.
Well, thanks, Daniel. And later in the show, we're going to play a story that Daniel filed for us this morning from a protest that happened in Saturday, and we're going to talk with Ashley about that. Let me thank a few more people before we bring Ashley on. Tina and Dennis Henneis from Brooksville, $100 contribution. They say this is for all the WMNF News and Public Affairs programming, especially Democracy Now!, Nola's show, Sean's show, Rob's show, Sustainable Living, True Talk, and all of it. So thank you for those donations. I appreciate that. Also, Anonymous from Bradenton Beach is contributing $100 to help us meet that match. Thank you so much for helping us do that. And Kim Ottaviani from St. Petersburg with a $300 donation to help us meet the match. Thank you so much for those donations. We really do need to hear from you right now. 813-238-8001 is the number to call in, and we're going to go to Ashley Green in just a second, and she'll have to unmute herself as well. There we go. I want to give out the number one more time, Ashley, and then we'll bring you on the show. But if I'd like you to support the station, support the great interviews and the great programming that we bring you, call us 813-238-8001 with your $100 donation, with your $50 donation, whatever you can do. And thank you so much, Daniel, for helping me pitch just now, and we'll play your story in just a little bit. But right now, what I'm going to do is bring on our next guest. Tensions are getting hot, especially in downtown St. Petersburg. Out-of-town agitators came to town on Saturday, and later this hour we'll hear much more about what happened. Our guest joining us live by Zoom is Ashley Green with Dream Defenders. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint Monday, Ashley.
Hey, thank you all so much for having me.
I really appreciate you coming on. It's so important that we talked about this topic and our guests can hear from you. And we'll get to what happened Saturday shortly, but why don't we rewind a bit to the beginning of the summer, remind our listeners how long various Black Lives Matter groups have been demonstrating in St. Pete and elsewhere, and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, in St. Pete, we've been demonstrating almost since the immediate aftermath of George Floyd's murder. I think there were some light protests earlier in the week, but probably the most distinctive day, at least for me, or the protest that stands out is that first Saturday. And ever since, there hasn't been a week where we haven't been out demonstrating for justice either every day or every weekend since then. And so for over 120, 130 something odd days, we've been moving for justice around George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, but also speaking locally about the need for greater police accountability and justice and equity in the Black community in St. Pete.
Our guest is Ashley Green with Dream Defenders, and you're based in St. Pete, isn't that right?
I am based in St. Petersburg. There was rumor otherwise, and I was very offended. I was like, look, my family lives in Clearwater, and I do spend a lot of time there, but I live in St. Pete.
What was it about the early protests? You mentioned the first week and especially that first Saturday. What was it that made it feel different this year?
Oh, that's hard to say, because for me, I didn't know if it was going to be different at first. You know, you've had me on the show before and are aware that I've been demonstrating and fighting for justice around a lot of different causes related to the movement for Black Lives for the better part of the last decade. And sometimes people come out once and then that's it. Sometimes people come out a couple of times and then that's it. And so I'll be honest, I didn't know if this was going to be a sustained effort. And in the first few weeks and months, really tried to play more of a support role, more of a role around resources and mentorship to help people understand how to make the most of the moment and really transition it into long-term organizing and work. It was the young folks who were out there every day that really sustained this over the last 4 months. And I'm so proud to be, you know, in the streets with folks who are 15 years old and leading these protests, who are 19 and 20 something, and really committed to making sure that the city that we live in doesn't need to experience the kind of violence that happened to Breonna Taylor in order to take police accountability seriously. And that more deeply understands that police accountability is just a small microcosm of what we need to be fighting for to make sure that there's justice and dignity for Black lives in the city. And so it's been an incredible experience getting to really be under the leadership of young folks. You know, so much of my activism over the last decade has been as a youth activist, and I'm sort of out of that phase now. But then also to be able to offer my wisdom and experience to really keep us sustained after some of the big, massive marches died down. You know, there were weeks where there were maybe like 10 people who would show up each day, and they still marched. And I'm so proud of folks for getting us to that moment, because it really helped when it came time to talk about the budget, to see that, to show city council that like we weren't going away, that we're actually committed to this for the long haul.
Our guest is Ashley Green with Dream Defenders, and we're talking about the Black Lives Matter protests that have been going on all summer and into the fall now. And there have been a lot of confrontations where motorists are upset that demonstrators are marching in the roadway, or they're crossing streets in crosswalks and blocking traffic for a while. Some drivers have slammed into protesters. Very few, if any, of the drivers have been cited. And some of the demonstrators have been injured. What have you seen when it comes to drivers and protesters?
Yeah, I say this often, especially because there was sort of rhetoric that emerged around our protest movement a couple of weeks ago that we were, you know, dangerous and rioters, and nothing could be further the truth. We've marched for over 130 something odd days with no injury or property damage except to ourselves. And it's been very difficult because it's a lot of rhetoric online that's really forwarding this idea that we need to be attacked. In crosswalks, all of these things always happen in crosswalks when we as pedestrians or demonstrators have the legal right of way. And for the most part, people just didn't care. You know, it was on video repeatedly, us being attacked by these vehicles, and they were being cheered on by people in the Pinellas and Bay Area Crime Watch group, in the Blue Thunder, Facebook group. On the post in downtown St. Pete Facebook group, on different Tampa Bay Times articles. I took a concealed carry class a few weeks ago because, to be honest, I believe in nonviolence in the streets and self-defense in my own home. And the gun shop that I went into had a t-shirt that said, "All lives splatter. I don't give a damn about your protest. Get out the road." And that's the kind of mentality that we've been facing all summer. And we face it because we know that the cause that we're working towards is more important than being deterred by really violent forces. But it's very frustrating when folks sort of equivocate about both sides. Both sides have problems. Both sides do not. We have been very disciplined. We have been very focused. We have been very clear about what we're marching towards. We have actually saved the city of St. Pete a heck of a lot of money by not having to patrol us during these marches, by having clear marshals and folks who are able to help with you know, getting people across the intersection to continue to demonstrate. And yet, you know, we've been met with violence at every turn. And it's really disappointing that so few of our leaders have spoken to that. So few of our leaders have been critical of speaking out against violence done to us, but always have something to say about what tactics that we might employ, whether or not we're being too disruptive or X, Y, Z. And it shows you the lack of moral clarity that that some folks have in this moment, that that property continues to be put over people, but more importantly, that what people matter is conditional to your political affiliation. It's just really disappointing. It's actually really terrifying. And like I said before, we're still committed, but I can't pretend like the threats from actual white nationalists haven't been something to take seriously. You know, we had a gun pulled on us the other night, and the police have spent the last couple of weeks still trying to justify it. Folks came from out of the city. It was not literally, I would say 90% of the people who demonstrated against us last Saturday were from out of the area and were quoted as being from out of the area and came into the city to incite violence. And it took us really leveraging every relationship that we had on council or with the city administration for them to take that kind of threat seriously. And it shouldn't have been that way. It should have been obvious and evident from day one that the people who are here to fight for a better future for the city should not be under threat of violence for doing so.
Our guest is Ashley Green, and you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. And in just a moment, Ashley, we're going to talk more about what happened on Saturday and what happened the previous Saturday that you were just referring to. I am going to take just a second or two to give out the number and to ask people for support. If you like programming like this, if you want to hear about people in your community making a difference, give us a call, 813-238-8001. You can also donate online at WMNF.org or on the WMNF app. This show needs to raise $1,900 between now and the top of the hour. So your $100 donation or your $50 contribution or your $5 or $10 a month Circle of Friends membership really would make a big difference right now. Can you make that contribution by calling 813-238-8001 and supporting the news and public affairs on WMNF. We're going to talk later about some of the topics that we've covered in the last few months, and we'll also hear a story that Daniel Figueroa IV, our reporter, did about Saturday's protests. But let me ask Ashley Green, our guest from Dream Defenders, how have the police handled the protests? You've touched on this briefly so far, but have they facilitated the demonstrations or have they contributed to things escalating? What's your take on how the police have handled it?
I would say neither. And I actually, for the most part, was deeply appreciative of that up until a couple of weeks ago. And I'll give you that caveat. I, you know, I've been active in the Tampa Bay area for a long time. And, you know, I've also been a part of the movement for Black Lives for a minute. And no matter where I've protested, I can tell you that police normally are responsible for escalating a lot of situations that would have never gotten there without people showing up in riot gear. And so, you know, I've actually really appreciated the St. Petersburg police's approach to the protest over the summer. It's not that we didn't know they were present. We could always see them from a distance. If there were ever truly, you know, an emergency that raised to the level of danger, I was under the assumption that that, you know, they would see it, intervene as necessary. But I thought that the approach was actually really helpful in making sure that that this didn't turn into Tampa, where I've seen a lot of my friends retaliated against, where I got tear gassed that first weekend like five times, no warning, where I had a friend who had to get a rubber bullet removed from their body. You know, and so again, yeah, have been probably very, very affirmative of that approach. I'd also protested before on the same streets where we had like bike patrols who helped navigate the protest. And when the opposition some of whom were three percenters or Proud Boys. I only say that based on what they were wearing, not by what they call themselves, which are patriots. And I think that's a really dangerous claiming of that word, but we can talk about that at another time. These people who showed up into the city to very clearly like incite violence, I was really disappointed by how little the city kept those two groups separate. That they totally have every First Amendment right to demonstrate as we do, and to even, in my belief, employ the same tactics that we've used during the demonstrations. But what they do not have a right to do is incite violence with physical force. And all throughout the night, these people were pushing and shoving on us, and we could see police in the distance. We knew the police were there, and it felt a little bit like a punishment, like a retaliation. Oh, you don't like us, you don't want us, and so handle it yourself. You know, I know that you said we would talk a little bit about what happened this past Saturday, and the previous Saturday, but I would be remiss not to mention in this moment that a gentleman literally assaulted a woman, gave her a concussion on video, seconds later then pulled out a gun and brandished it. And then when somebody attempted to let police know what was happening, they swore, oh, it's okay, we'll keep you all separated, don't worry. And that wasn't true. They let those same people follow us into the pier and continue to try and provoke violent altercations, continue to try and provoke you know, really dangerous situations for all parties involved. And so, you know, for most of the summer, I think police made the right choice about how they conducted themselves. But I think I question whether or not they knew the threat that we were under and why they took so little action. The Blue Thunder Motorcycle Club is a St. Pete Police affiliate from what they describe themselves as. I'm not saying what St. Pete Police describe themselves as. I'm saying what this motorcycle club affiliates as. And again, was there in a prior protest heckling and trying to instigate altercations. This Pinellas and Bay Area Crime Watch group is one that plenty of people have reported for violent activity, including its previous administrators, one of whom now is Jonathan Lee Riches, who, if you're familiar with, is very committed to trying to instigate these kinds of altercations to make a political quote-unquote point. And I just think that there was a level of indifference because police don't like to be held accountable. The word accountability is not something that the police union, that the PBA or that Suncoast is really a fan of. And at the end of the day, that proves the need for why there must be accountability. That regardless of whether or not you like what I say, regardless of my politics, I'm still a resident and a taxpayer that is worthy of the same service that you're supposed to be providing to everybody. And we've just seen how little justice that there actually is in these institutions, that, you know, you can't put your own politics aside to do the job that you're responsible for because somebody says that they don't like you. That's really troubling, that these are the same people who are out in the street supposedly handling, you know, the most difficult problems that we have in the city. And so, yeah, the police presence, I'm reassessing in this moment. All summer, I thought this is great. This is what other cities should do. It actually keeps everybody a little bit safer, keeps everybody a little less on edge. And then we were made the tools of somebody else's political agenda. And I had to reconcile how little protection we actually had from these folks. And, you know, that's been difficult. That's been difficult. I will say, much better job this past Saturday. And we can get into that when we discuss Saturday.
Yeah, our guest is Ashley Green with Dream Defenders. And my name is Sean Canaan. I'm a reporter with WMNF at Tampa on 88.5 FM. And we're going to break in just for a second, Ashley, and we will talk about what happened this Saturday. And as you said, there was much less physical confrontation, at least this Saturday. And we'll hear a report from Daniel Figueroa in just a minute. But I want to break in just for a second or two with Rob Lori, and we're going to ask for people to support WMNF Community Radio. we've raised $7,100 this morning. We still need to raise $1,900 by the end of the show. The number to call in is 813-238-8001. If you appreciate the type of programming that we bring you every single weekday on News and Public Affairs in the morning, give us a call right now and make a financial contribution. If you think that we are covering the Black Lives Matter movement appropriately, give us a call and let us know and show your support for this kind of journalism. The number to call in, 813-238-8001. Of course, you can always go to the web at WMNF.org, or you can make a donation on the WMNF app.
Yeah, one of the reasons WMNF was founded was to give a voice to the voiceless and to bring on grassroots activists who frequently are not allowed on mainstream media, or you don't hear them for extended amounts of time. You hear a soundbite that might last 3 or 8 seconds or 10 seconds. But here you're hearing Sean interview Ashley Green, and Ashley is giving us her perspective, a perspective that you're not going to get on any other radio station. And that's why Midpoint is so important, and that's why Sean's work is so important. So please make that contribution. Help us stay on the air, because your donation keeps us independent. We don't have to worry about that big company down the street, that big box store that is underwriting our programming. We only have to worry about you. And if you want to applaud Sean and say, yes, we want to hear more of what the people at the grassroots are saying, then please make that phone call right now. Make that contribution. The phone number to call is 813-238-8001. And also our email address is, our online address is WMNF.org. But please make that contribution and say, yes, this is valuable, and I have a better sense of my community after listening to Sean's Midpoint program. We are still, though, 19 phone calls away, 19 people away from reaching our goal today. So we have about a half an hour to go, and we desperately, desperately need one person to step up to say, thank you, Sean, for doing this great interview. 813-238-8001.
And before I go back to Ashley, I'm going to read a couple of the topics that we've covered in the past few weeks in Midpoint Mondays. Whether people support mask mandates or not, we've covered that in the last few weeks. The death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and what would be next for reproductive rights. Pinellas Teacher came on to talk about why she was taking a leave of absence. We talked about the Nestle bottled water in the springs of North Florida. And we talked about a police community survey in Tampa. So those are just a few of the topics that we've talked about so far in Midpoint Mondays in the last month or two. But we only do this with your support. 813-238-8001.
Just got a donation online of $88.50. And they're going to get the brand new WMNF t-shirt. So thank you very much. Anonymous, who's listening in Washington State.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much, Anonymous. And we're going to be back to thank more people in just a few minutes, but I'm going to go back to my interview with Ashley Green. And, you know, we've talked so much, Ashley, so far. Thanks, Rob. We've talked about what happened on Saturday. Maybe now would be a good time for me to play the report that was filed by our reporter, Daniel Figueroa IV. He was there Saturday night. He knew things could get tense, and so he wanted to follow everything that happened that evening. So let's listen to that, and we'll talk about that when we get back. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. Let me read the introduction here. Many people expected there would be physical confrontations a week after a Back the Blue supporter pulled a gun on Black Lives Matter protesters in St. Petersburg. WMNF's Daniel Figueroa IV reports that activists and counter-protest groups verbally clashed in St. Pete, but with an increased police presence, there was no violence broke out, but tensions did remain high.
When the flames wouldn't catch, Gary Snow grabbed the Nazi flag from the small hole he burned into it and used his hands to tear it apart.
Let me just make a point. Yeah!
I'm not a white supremacist. I don't believe in Nazis. I'm not a Nazi.
When he pulled out an anti-fascist action flag, he skipped the lighter and used a knife.
This is what I think of Antifa!
That's an Antifa flag right there.
Snow, a self-described provocateur, came to St. Pete from Fort Myers. In the last few years, he's made a name for himself throughout Florida. In 2017, Duval County Sheriff Mike Williams called Snow a catalyst when a Jacksonville anti-war protest turned violent. Five protesters were arrested, but Snow was not. Later that year, he was arrested while countering a Black Lives Matter protest in Bradenton, but charges were never filed. A light but steady sheet of rain drizzled over downtown St. Pete as nearly 300 activists with Movement St. Pete gathered for a vigil and march from South Straw Park to the pier. The sound of a beating tom-tom drum and chants were noticeably absent as the activists moved from Straub to the pier, with only the sound of wet grass squeaking and crunching beneath the soles of their shoes. Activist Ashley Green.
It is fitting that we march silently for many reasons, but a little bit like a funeral procession, like the death of white supremacy.
Hundreds of protesters encircled Green and other speakers like Rabbi Michael Torup as they stood under Janet Echelman's woven sculpture and called for an end to violence, hatred, and white supremacy.
Tonight, we are of one voice. We speak out for peace. We speak out for tolerance.
Meanwhile, counter-protesters sporting mostly American flag or Donald Trump apparel marched to meet the protesters. Police on bicycles formed a barrier as the counter-protesters shouted to the crowd. Snow, joined by local right-wing activist Jonathan Riches, grabbed a bullhorn and began to antagonize protesters.
You tell these police right here, you don't need their help right now. You tell them to leave.
Snow said he was not affiliated with any group, but was joined by members of the Patriot Action Network and eventually Blue Thunder, a law enforcement-supporting motorcycle group led locally by insurance investigator and former Colorado Springs police officer Eric Harris. Snow asked one protester if he had a knife and accused him, without evidence, of having stabbed someone.
Did you stab somebody on it?
The Saturday before, a Blue Lives Matter counter-protester was seen on camera shoving an already injured woman to the ground and pulling out a pistol he aimed at protesters. St. Petersburg police released footage claiming it showed two male Black protesters with knives. According to attorney Johnny Bardeen, slowed footage shows that what was believed to be a knife was actually a cell phone in one instance, a belt in another, and a bandana in the next. That didn't stop counter-protesters from claiming they were the ones to be assaulted.
The knife was pulled on me.
Movement St. Pete trains its members in de-escalation techniques and has a de-escalation team that wore safety vests and stood on the periphery of the march. Before meeting the other counter-protesters for the march, Blue Thunder met for a meeting and briefing at Three Daughters Brewing after Ferg Sports Bar told them they couldn't gather there. A journalist attempted to take a photo of the bikers, and one was sent to intimidate him by waving brass knuckles in his face.
So you're intimidated by cameras?
Yes, yes.
That allows you to wave a brass knuckle in someone's face?
He's intimidating me, yes.
Back downtown, activists marched to Straub before dispersing. A group of counter-protesters waited at the park while another followed them back, shouting obscenities at protesters between Back the Blue and Blue Lives Matter chants. Blue Thunder and other groups have been helping to organize counter-protests since a Tampa Bay Times reporter tweeted a now-viral video depicting a confrontation between protesters and diners at Park Shore Grill on Beach Drive. The video, which was viewed millions of times, prompted Blue Thunder to create Saturday's Take Back DTSP event, inviting people from around the state to protect diners from harassment and keep streets unobstructed from marches. Bardeen said the video is responsible for recent tension after 4 months of peaceful marching.
You can draw a straight line from that viral video taken on Beach Drive with the diners to a week later, and the police are looking for two young Black men who they thought had weapons, who did not. And now, because of that, the safety and the liberty of those two Black men who are innocent is jeopardized.
Times spokesperson Sherry Day said the reporter posted the video, then attempted to ask questions, but no one would speak to them. A loosely organized group of counter-protesters with the Take Back DTSP event attempted to march from Straub Park to City Hall. As the group crossed 2nd Avenue and 2nd Street, many didn't make it through the light, impeding southbound vehicular traffic. Before getting to City Hall, about half the group split off and headed back to Beach Drive at the apparent request of Blue Thunder, many of whom were seated at a large table outside of Trist Lounge or drinking at nearby bars. On the way, the group passed Bacchus Wine Bistro. Vanessa and Brent Ballard of Sarasota were sitting outside drinking wine and picking at a charcuterie board with their new friends Jacob Andrews and Peter Alexander. As the group walked by, marchers shoved signs and flags in the couple's face and began yelling at them. The diners said they felt threatened and harassed.
All I've seen is Trump Pence supporters
shoving their sign in
here.
Our face.
Literally, we're having and sitting we're here having a nice conversation.
Some Black Lives Movement have walked by, but they peacefully don't say anything. You don't
yell at us about whatever. They yelled,
you want to defund the police.
We're having
wine.
For WMNF News, I'm Daniel Figueroa IV in St. Petersburg.
Well, that was a report filed by WMNF's Daniel Figueroa IV. And our guest here on WMNF's Midpoint Monday is Ashley Green. She was, you heard her voice in the report there, and she's with the Dream Defenders, part of the coalition that marches in downtown St. Petersburg. Ashley, any more thoughts there on what happened on Saturday night?
Oh, man. I'm not going to lie, a little bit of it feels like a fever dream. On Saturday, we had a very clear intention, which is that we were not going to give these people attention. But they are emboldened by this idea of conflict and that they weren't worth the time, especially given that the overwhelming majority of these folks don't live in St. Pete, know nothing of St. Pete, know nothing of the marches that have been led in St. Pete over the last 100-something odd days, most of which have had overwhelming support by people in downtown St. Pete, the exception of a few outliers, again, with their own political agendas. And so, it's interesting to hear the perspective of the couple who said they were harassed by these quote-unquote patriots, because we did our best to not give them that attention. And I think really infuriated them. They attempted to try and goad and intervene and cause conflict, and we just weren't here for them. White supremacy and white power is dying in America. They understand that, which is why they are fighting the way in which they are. And I can't say I'm sad about that. I can't say I'm apologetic about that. I can't say I'm concerned about that. It's long overdue that if we are going to be a country that can actually live up to its morals, not just its rhetoric, but its actual ideas, then white power has to die. Hearing somebody like Gary Snow, who goes across the state to cause conflict, who literally was a part of a Russian-backed rally in 2016, who talks about, you shouldn't be allowed to go and be provocative, but then is provocative, who had to buy a Nazi flag in order to destroy it. And then at the same time of destroying a Nazi flag, destroyed an anti-fascism flag, as if those two ideas are not in direct conflict with one another. These people are not worth the attention. And, we clearly had to give them some level of attention in our planning because we were not going to put people's safety at risk. But I'm really proud of the residents of St. Pete for making a statement. I'm really proud of the residents of St. Pete for rejecting that kind of violence in our city. That was a large part about why we chose to march silently, which is that we have spoken up for Black lives and we have spoken out against white supremacy. And at this point in time, it's now got to be the folks on the sideline who take action to reject this really outdated, this really violent, and this really dangerous rhetoric and actions that have been brought into a city that is not going to go back to that history. We do have that kind of history here in St. Pete, but the residents here are just unwilling to return to it. And I was really proud about how people showed up and showed out, not just the folks who were at the protest, but the folks who were just trying to enjoy their Saturday night. To that point, I do want to make a statement about why we choose to march in the street. Because ultimately, it is actually a lot safer for us to be, and we have marshals, we only operate on one side of the road, we're not trying to impede traffic. But because of COVID, so much of dining is outside, and marching on the sidewalk puts us directly in between a restaurant and its diners. And that most of downtown St. Pete is bars or nice restaurants where people go, have drinks, watch sports, XYZ. And that being on the sidewalk actually is a confrontation between us and them, and that we don't want to disrupt people trying to have their meals, that we don't want to disturb businesses, that we have a purpose and a cause and a message. There's never been a march that I haven't been at where people haven't left a bar and started walking with us in solidarity, or left their group who was just on the sidewalk enjoying a night out in St. Pete and haven't become a part of this because we are supported here. And so to see these folks come from out of town and then lie and be wrong and not get the attention that they desired for, it felt like its own victory. And I'm really proud of how disciplined and focused people were on the cause that we were there to forward, and not these people who are literally being told by the Trump campaign, cause this chaos. It helps us at the ballot box. We're not going to be tools for someone else's agenda. We have a very clear agenda. We have a very clear purpose, and we're going to work towards it until we see that justice here in St. Pete.
Ashley, before I let you go, why don't you let people know where they can join you or how they can find out more information if they want to learn more about your group?
Sure. You can follow St. Pete Peace Protest on Facebook or Movement St. Pete on Facebook. I just want to take a second to make sure that folks are grounded in what our demands are, and these are very brief. But we do want to see a reduction to the St. Pete police budget proportionate to the decrease in crime over the past decade, a reallocation of that same funding towards affordable housing, healthcare, education, and minority community outreach, having an institution of general elections for all members of the Police Conduct Review Committee, continuously recording body cameras and decriminalization of protests. Further, we want to see a reallocation of $20 million from the general fund towards housing, affordable housing equity, free early childhood education provided by the city, equitably distributing bridge loans and grants via the CRA for residential and commercial development, citizen control of the Southside CRA, youth and Black-focused workforce development, and programs that end health disparities in the city. And so if anyone wants to know what we're out here fighting for, those are the things that we are very clearly focused on and working, be it in the streets, in the halls of City Hall, or in the community itself to forward. Follow, again, St. Pete Peace Protest, Movement St. Pete. We don't just march. We do a weekly neighborhood cleanup. We feed the houseless every week. We're over at a community garden. We're having Know Your Rights trainings and other opportunities, providing mental health counseling that the Foundation for a Healthy St. Pete has gotten us connected to. And so it is an actual movement, not just a protest. And we hope that other folks of conscience will join us in this movement.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint Monday, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me, and hope to come back soon.
Thanks. Ashley Green is with Dream Defenders, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. And we're going to finish the last 3 minutes or so thanking some people who donated during the show. And Rob's with me too, and we're going to ask you for your support. We still need about $1,800 to raise by the top of the hour. Aaron Kunzel from Tampa called in a $60 contribution. Thank you so much to Aaron. And we'd like your support. If you can support this show, give us a call, 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org.
Yeah, we're closer than $1,800 because Andrea Behrens from St. Petersburg just made a $35 contribution. She says, thank you, Sean. And thanks to Anonymous in... Valrico just made a $100 contribution. Anonymous says she thinks MNF does a great job of giving news from all sides. This is an additional pledge of her $100 this morning. So she made two $100 donations today. Thank you, Anonymous. Well, Sean, we are very close now. We're just about $1,600 away, 16 phone calls. We have about 3 minutes to go, and we're hoping that you will help us end this Midpoint program today with a bang and help us reach that goal. If you love the hard work that Sean does, please make that contribution online at WMNF.org. And we just need to hear from about 16 people, and we will reach that goal today. We're doing a mini drive. The drive is going to end tomorrow, so it's going to go by very fast. It's not going to be here Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. And if you really think that there should be an expansion of the dialogue on radio here in the Tampa Bay area, and not just the same people over and over again, but you want to hear people like Ashley Green and others, if you appreciate the fact that Sean brings those people on and a lot of the hosts bring grassroots people on, please make that contribution and help keep this radio station on the air. I see one call, Sean. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get one more phone call. just one good person by calling 813-238-8001 or making their donation online. Sean, that means that we need to hear from about 15 more people.
Yeah, we do need to hear from you. I would like to get some support for the Midday News and Public Affairs, especially Midpoint Monday here on 88.5 FM. If you support this kind of programming, we need to hear from you. Can you make a $100 donation or maybe a $500 donation? Maybe you can give WMNF a $500 contribution right now. Call 813-238-8001. You can also donate on the web at WMNF.org.
We can't do it without you, and we can't stay strong and independent without you. And you hear all sorts of ideas and thoughts and people on this radio station, and it's here because so many great people, tens of thousands of people, made contributions in the past. Now we're trying to make WMNF grow into the future. So please make that contribution right now. Help us reach our goal. Go online, go to WMNF.org. But if you appreciate what Sean does, let us hear from you today. Don't turn your back on us. 813-238-8001.
Thanks so much to everyone who donated. Please call now, 813-238-8001. Stay tuned now for Latino 54. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks